Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
We get together here every Tuesday on this fine community radio station. Yes, we really, truly are all in this together. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Yes, the Donald on the Kitchen show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Yes, we thank them. We thank you, our listeners. We love you, our listeners. We hope you'll love us back by supporting us during this fundraising time and support us all year. We appreciate your ears. We appreciate your attention. And we also appreciate your hard cash money to help us bring you more of this locally owned, community directed, volunteer. It's just a wonderful organization. Yes, it is.
And we have a good amount of fun here as well.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Well, we're still sort of waiting for spring. There's sunshine today, but the gardens seem so long from anything growing. It just is kind of sad.
Well, wait, I am getting the motherwort popping up.
There's green. There is green.
Tiny little bits. And the garlic chives, while they seem really unhappy and a little crumpled and confused, They are showing their heads.
We hope. I did get onion plants planted, a bunch of them, and they do weather the snow all right as long as they're deep enough. And I was kind of worried these past evenings, but I looked out this morning and everybody is standing at attention. We're looking pretty good out there.
I mean, I keep saying it's spring is inevitable. I mean, hello.
Yes, it is. I'm trying to raise seedlings in an unheated greenhouse during this bit, and usually I have no problem whatsoever.
Right. Lana is extremely talented. If you're having a hard time, the rest of us are in total despair.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I have been doing some creative things with row covers on the inside there, but boy, oh boy.
Row covers on the inside?
Row covers.
What are you doing? Putting blankets on the beds?
Yeah. Okay. At night.
That's a real cover crop, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Oh, and one more thing going on Onion Creek Farm. We are kind of counting the days until we get some new lambs, and it's going to be experience for me. I will let you know all about it.
How close are we?
Probably the end of the week or early next week. I'm just kind of starting to pace the floor
and
myself.
And how are you going to know? Do they make noises?
Well, Megan, our sheep mom, keeps telling me they get very restive and restless and walk around, stand up, sit down.
Do they talk?
They always talk. I can't tell. So I'll learn a lot more during this whole process.
Yes, of course, am very nervous about the coyote population and the new baby sheep.
I heard some last night. I'm going to run two layers of electric fencing around.
Right. And some doggies on duty, perhaps.
Of course. Well, coyotes are actually pretty they're pretty skittish, but we'll see.
I know, but what a temptation, a baby lamb.
I like lamb. You know. Sorry. I want to remind you again that this is our fundraising session, and for this fine radio station, call 515-292-2878 or go to our website, khoyfm.org. There is a magic donate button there, and you can find out more about this fine radio station because things do cost. Things cost things, okay? So just want to kind of get our minds thinking about what things cost.
And, we got to pay our electric bill for example.
I've got this little thing from the Iowa Farmers Union, a little handout here, little facts and figures, about what is the farmer's share of some fruits and vegetables and stuff that we buy in the grocery store, just to remember that things cost money. So when you buy, this is just kind of an average.
This is going to be depressing. I want to just forewarn you guys.
These are the USDA research numbers here. An 18 ounce box of cereal, if it retails for $4.79, the farmer gets a whopping 5 cents of that.
Okay. Bummer.
Bacon. We all love bacon. 1 pound of bacon.
Now, we're making a lot of bacon in this neighborhood, okay?
Retail. $5.39. Farmer, 73 cents a pound.
Whew.
There you go. So keep in mind, there's people working hard out there.
Right, that's way less than even 20%.
It is.
And that's a high-value item, meats and, yeah.
Well, another sort of high-value item, you think milk, everybody said milk prices. 1 gallon of fat-free milk, if it retails for $4.49, the farmer gets $1.44 a gallon. There you go. Keep that in mind. And these are not, like, new numbers. This is kind of how it goes
Lana,
across the board.
Do you want to explain to them very briefly where the rest of that money goes?
Oh, well, somebody's got to make the milk bottles, you know. And somebody's got to, like, drive it all over the country and market it and get it into stores.
And distributors and retailers and handlers and everybody but the farmer.
Everybody. Gets
okay, the moral of the story is, folks, try to buy local.
And be aware of where your dollars go.
Well, and when you shop at the farmer's market, which will be opening soon, I don't know what we're going to have because we've had no warm weather, but when you buy at the farmer's market, all of the money that you're spending goes right to the farmer.
Right.
Hallelujah.
But even then, the farmer has to pay his costs or her costs. You don't get to pay for those egg cartons themselves. And then if you don't get them,
not only do you have to grow the food, but then you have to be the marketer as well, which is time consuming, right, Lana?
It is. But it's fun, too. Oh, and here, one more thing before we get into our next topic of the day. We've been talking about grains and bread these past few weeks. We had someone from the bread lab here for a while, and that was a good show.
A wheat breeder, as
wheat
a matter
breeder.
Of fact.
Yeah. So here's another fact about the farmer's share, where your money goes. A loaf of bread, 2 pound loaf, big hunker loaf of bread. If it retails for $2.99, the farmer gets 10 cents. There you go. So we've been thinking about grains, and there's lots of different grains besides wheat. We've been thinking of other grains, too. We talked about grains as part of a cover crop regime, too, and finding markets for these small grains. Donna has been kind of researching a market for grains.
In case you guys missed it, 2 shows ago, we had Steve Jones on the Bread Lab, and he is a wheat breeder in Oregon. But what he really talked about is the small grains and rebuilding the markets for small grains in your local food economy. Now, Iowa, that's going on all over the place. If you don't grow corn and soybeans, how are you going to market it? Obviously, there's lots of ways to get the corn out of the field and into the grain elevators and off to the whoever's buying it. And this is also true of soybeans. But for other commodities, being barley, oats, other small grains, wheats, that we need to grow as cover crops, for example, as we talked to Alicia Bowers last week from Practical Farmers of Iowa. The other uses for grains, and there's been quite a lot of research going on with this, both at ISU and with organic farmers, for example, you are not allowed to grow corn and soy and corn and soy. You must rotate your crops, and there are good reasons for that in terms of soil building and pest and weed cycle disruption and things like that. So if an Iowa organic farmer, for example, he grows a year of corn, he grows a year of soybeans, then the third year, what's he going to grow? Well, typically the products have been either wheats, barleys, oats, alfalfa, stuff like that, which are much harder to find markets for. So, as Steve Jones was saying, what they've been doing in their community, of course, is either turning it into they have more millers and more bakeries and more distilleries and more breweries. So we did talk to our only miller in the state, I believe, which is Earl Hafner. Panora, Iowa, early morning harvest, but we haven't looked at the number of distilleries. So distilleries are a great high-end use of grains because they take the grains and they make something quite valuable or rather expensive. So in Iowa, listen to this list of distilleries that we have. There is the Cedar Ridge Winery and Distillery. That's in Cedar Rapids, I believe. They make some great bourbons and whiskeys and a bunch of other things, like even Everclear, which is actually lovely if you're going to be flavoring your own spirits at home to use the Everclear. The other well-known one, I think, is the Mississippi River Distilling Company, which is in LeClair over by the Quad Cities. And I know that Mississippi River, they talk about using grains only from a 100-mile radius around, and they contract directly with the farmers. So, of course, that some of that's in Illinois and some of it's in Iowa. They are on the Iowa side. There is, of course, the well-known Templeton Rye. However, I don't want to disillusion you about Templeton Rye because it is quite heavily marketed as made in Iowa, but I believe a lot of it is actually produced out of state. However, they have a good PR campaign. Then there is the Iowa Distilling Company, which is in, it doesn't even say where it is. But they make Steel Drum Rum, Prairie Fired Cinnamon Flavored Whiskey, Country Gal Moonshine, and it says it's all handmade in Iowa. There's also the Broadbent Distillery in Norwalk. They make a grappa and a limoncello, which is kind of a and an orange cello. Those are flavored vodkas, basically,
I thought they were a soft drink. No, really, it's a vodka.
Well, you take a vodka or an Everclear or some highly distilled clear grain, and you put in lemons and sugar and lemon peel.
Flavored. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yay. There you go.
There's Dehner. Is that how you pronounce this? D-E-H-N-E-R?
I tried Dehner.
Dehner. Okay. There you go. Dehner, which is in Clive, and they make, listen to these, vodka, 151, Havana Judge rums, and Red Boot whiskeys. There you go. And apparently the owner, Joseph Dehner, builds all of his own equipment. Now that sounds like fun, building your own distillery. Then there's the Artisan Grain Distillery in Davenport. They have moonshine, white whiskey, white rum, and other young spirits while their whiskey is aging in barrels. No, Paradise Distilling Company in Dubuque. And Sippin' Sweet Corn Whiskey in Grimes. Oh, boy, here's another one. Iowa Legendary Rye in Carroll County. And the Lonely Oak Distillery. How about that?
Well, that is use for all these fields of grain growing.
Yeah, as Steve Jones would say, that's not value added. That is value retained.
Good idea. We're keeping the
grains in Iowa. We're making something that we can have a good time with. Then the other, I looked up the Iowa, what's it called? The Craft Beer, Iowa Brewers Guild. So according to them, the impact of brewing in this state, and there are, looks like close to 100 breweries. It's like every town has got their own brew. It has brought, and this is from a 2014 poll. At that time, it was 15,000 jobs, $100 million impact on the economy, and produced nearly 41,000 barrels of beer. And it is projected to triple by 2019, which is only next year. I suspect it has tripled. So these are not small industries in Iowa, and they are producing things that are grown here, consumed here, and give jobs to interesting jobs.
Yes.
And skilled jobs to quite a lot of people. So, cheers.
And we're all the better for it.
That's
yes,
right.
It is.
In moderation, right?
Well, yeah, but see what can happen when we diversify.
Well, and we haven't even mentioned the hops that are beginning to be grown here because beer needs hops. And barley malting, which is another part of the process where you actually take the barley and it has to be basically sprouted in a temperature and humidity controlled environment before it can be turned into the beer. So some of that also may be developing within the state as another industry. Hallelujah. We got some more jobs in our lovely rural economy.
And beer and whiskey. Oh, how nice. Now, that's great news. And to kind of course, balance things off here, the Donalana Kitchen News Department has a little something that I found on the internet. And this has a little to do.
Is this our bummer news?
This is our heads up, folks, news. This is from an article from alternet.org written by Zen Honeycutt. And she is a the founder of, get this, Moms Across America. And if it, now, that organization should cause.
How could you doubt Moms Across America?
I like it. Anyway, they are researching things. And they find out that like many beer and wine brands, the popular ones, the biggies, are contaminated with Monsanto weed killer. In 2015, there was a lawsuit against 31 brands of wine for high levels of arsenic. In Germany in 2016, they tested for glyphosate and found it all over the place. In California, 20 California wines were found to be positive for glyphosate.
Now, wait a minute, Lana.
Yeah.
Glyphosate is heavily sprayed, as we know, because we live in Iowa in the middle of corn and soybeans and genetically modified crops, which tolerate glyphosate. So there are large amounts of glyphosate used in the production. But grapes, wheat.
Get this. Now, in big, especially big vineyards, big wheat-producing areas, glyphosate is used heavily to kill the crop so that all the weeds are gone and harvesting is easier in wheat.
Oh, it's true. You know, it is also used as a desiccant to dry out the grains at the end of the harvest season.
And in vineyards, it's used between the rows. You don't want any unsightly weeds between the rows.
Vineyards have better practices, and they actually put cover crops in the rows.
That's true. But Roundup was used. It was great stuff when it first came out. Boy, we were going to use it all over. However, find out, it doesn't dry off, it doesn't wash or cook off, and they are very dangerous, even at very low levels. Not so good here. And you'd think, oh, well, there are organic versions on the organic wheat and organic grapes. However, they found out that even these are being contaminated because Roundup and its family of nasty bits are heavily susceptible to pesticide drift, water contamination, and clouds of this stuff can kind of jump from field to field. Even though brewers and vintners are just, they aren't trying to do the bad thing here. All of a sudden, all of these nasty things are showing up in wine.
Well, I want to say that you, instead of being totally despairing, you have to know that in organic products, the amount of drift is significantly reduced compared to when they're actually spraying it directly onto the product. So even within the organic standards or in the non-GMO standards, for example, the amount of contamination is, you know, it's everywhere. There is a small tolerance level to even, I mean, you just can't get away with it.
That's true.
So the idea of eating organic or non-GMO things is to reduce the risk.
Reduce the risk. And now it's kind of heads up for everybody. Everybody's trying to get away from this stuff that Monsanto sells. And,
well, not everybody, Lana.
I'm talking about beer and wine because you think beer and wine.
Okay.
Oh, boy, everybody tries to do the right thing. How can you have a fancy schmancy beer commercial with, you know, pesticide drift in the background? That's not so good. So even the makers of Michelob, Anheuser-Busch, announced last week that they are doubling down and are going to come out with an organic wheat-based beer called Ultra Pure Gold. And here's another little interesting thing. It seems that the more expensive beers are more susceptible to this glyphosate and arsenic contamination because barley and oats and wheat are used, and that's where you find it. The cheaper beers are made with rice, a lot of rice in there. And they, believe it or not, they don't use glyphosate on rice. So,
oh.
So drink cheap beer, I suppose, for a while.
Oh, dear.
Until they figure this out. This is important. This is important. Just be aware.
There is an upcoming event, May 15th.
Yeah, very good.
I'm highly recommending this, and we will probably have him on our show. Dr. Charles Benbrook is coming. He was the chief scientist for the Organic Center for a long time. This man knows whereof he speaks. He will be here in Ames on May 15th at the public library at 3 o'clock talking about he's being brought in by Pesticide Action Network, among others, and he'll be talking about glyphosate basically in our own neighborhood and the effects and the things that we need to know about it because it is ubiquitous. It is an issue in Iowa. So we will be hearing from Dr. Charles Benbrook in the near future about these things. And very specific applications to us here in the middle of Iowa. So that is a way to get some more information coming up soon. The other thing that came out this week from Environmental Working Group, another big national organization, is the annual report of the Dirty Dozen. Okay, so this is something that gives you guys a little handle at the supermarket of what's important. So on their Dirty Dozen list.
More bad news, good news. Watch out for this stuff, folks.
Okay. They put this out once a year and they reevaluate pesticide levels in conventional produce. This does not apply to organic produce. This is conventional produce. So they give you the 12 worst, most heavily sprayed items in produce. And they do suggest that if you can, try to buy organic of these versions. Now, they also do the clean dozen, too. But let's tell you what's on the Dirty Dozen this year. They rank them, and it is. Here we go. In order of contaminations, nectarines, apples, grapes, peaches, cherries, pears, tomatoes, celery, potatoes, and sweet bell peppers.
Ha! Huh.
And I think at the beginning was spinach is – strawberries, of course, are the first.
Ah.
Spinach is the second.
Ah.
So you can find this all at the Environmental Working Group on their website because, of course, you're not going to remember this. I just go, okay, strawberry, spinach. But they also have the Clean 15. In the Clean 15, and this is stuff that's okay, the top one is avocados. Good job there. Fewer than 1% of avocados tested positive for pesticides. Best of all, only one pesticide was found on the avocado tested. For these reasons, the Environmental Working Group ranked avocados as the number one cleanest produce.
And it's good that it's a good year for avocados.
Yeah, that's right. So we've been doing okay. Followed on the list are sweet corn, pineapples, cabbage, onions, frozen sweet peas, papayas, asparagus, mangoes, eggplant, honeydew, melon, kiwi, cantaloupe, cauliflower, and broccoli. They do want to say, however, that there is a little caution that a small portion of sweet corn, papaya, and summer squash sold in the U.S. is produced from genetically modified seeds. So if you want to avoid GMOs, you best buy those items organically.
Yeah.
Or ask. Like at the farmer's market last summer, and I did receive a little hostility in this on a personal level, I do ask the farmers that are growing if it's genetically modified or not. And I did have this really funny, not hilarious, but funny experiences. As I was asking one of the farmers what kind of seed he was using, there was a man, unrelated to the farmer, standing right next to me, and he launched into a tirade, basically telling me that I shouldn't even be asking that it was a stupid question.
Oh,
there's nothing wrong with these genetically modified, and I'm thinking, that's your opinion. I still have the right to ask. I want to know. I do have, I can choose still in this country. I have the freedom to choose what I want to eat, more or less, within financial parameters, okay? Yeah. If I can afford it, I'm going to eat it, right? So that's the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15, okay? That's from the Environmental Working Group.
There are things out there to eat, and we can make good choices. You're listening to KHOI 89.1 Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a little bit of ragtime music from famous and wonderful pianist Eubie Blake. Eubie Blake was born like way back many centuries ago, you know, when they had like ragtime music and things. And actually, he lived to be 100 years old. He did. And he played, he wrote a lot of stuff. He lived to be 100 years old. And here's a great quote from him that was supposedly offered by him when he was quite up in years. He said, "If I'd known I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself." Yes, I would. Anyway, that's Eubie Blake, and we'll hear a little bit more about them, about him, and a little bit more of his music later. We're here in the Donna Lana Kitchen today to remind you about supporting community radio station, and thanks to those of you who have donated. Yes, we have a little bit of words of wisdom here from some nice folks that are in our studio. Here's words from an intern that we've had the joy of working with. This is Felix Nguyen. So have at it, Felix.
Hello. As Lana said, I am one of the interns here at KHOI, and it has been an amazing experience getting to know everybody and learning about broadcasting here. I think KHOI does an amazing thing for the Ames community because everybody gets a chance to talk about things that are important to them. So, if you want to become a part of this family, come on down to the Historic Vantorium building at 410 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames and say, "I want to be a member of KHOI." And you should, because you can be a part of helping the community and building the community. If you come on in, we have great volunteers that are happy to walk you through in signing up to volunteer, or even better, becoming a member of us. So it's only $55, and that's only 15 cents a day. You can sign up by coming to the station or by calling. The phone number is 515-292-2878. Or you can go online to khoifm.org and click the donate button. If that is difficult for you, call in. Our volunteers are happy to walk you through the process. So, come join us because we are doing great things and you can be a part of it.
Thank you. Thank you, Felix. Felix was joined us on the Donalana Kitchen occasionally. She's been here helping us along here, doing things on the computer and all sorts of things, getting us all up to snuff, actually. And we had a wonderful time talking to her about Vietnamese New Year, Lunar New Year, way back when it was Lunar New Year time. So everyone has a story to tell, and we're glad that she's here. We're talking about the cost of things here. And it costs to do this radio station, and we all make choices about what we spend our money on. I just ran across this little news item. I subscribe to a magazine called Yes Magazine. It's a positive Yes Magazine. It has all kinds of good things in it. And it's got a page of facts and figures. It kind of helps put things in perspective. Well, it takes a lot of money to run this radio station, and everything takes money. Now, we recently had heard news about the Cassini spacecraft, the Cassini probe. Actually, I think it was called the Cassini-Huygens mission, of shooting this spacecraft out way past our solar system, and it kept sending us information back. It's important things. It's important things. It traveled 4.9 billion miles. That's a lot. It's hard to get your mind around all this kind of stuff. It left our planet on October 15th, 1997, but it's been sending us back hundreds of millions of gigabytes of information, and it took over 400,000 pictures and sent us back images of what's out there, and it feeds our brains, it feeds our knowledge. However, I think it's beyond its use. It kind of got out of touch with us last fall. In September 2017, it kind of gave up.
That's a 20 year run. That's not bad.
That's really,
for
really
some
good
tin can technology
it
out there.
It's something that we could do it. We can do it as human beings. We put our energy and our money into this sort of thing, and we send our ideas and our quest for knowledge into the stars. So the total cost of this mission, the Cassini space mission,
For 20 years
was $3.9 billion. Oh, my gosh, that's an awful lot, and we just shot it up there. But we got so much in return. I kind of like this last little bit of information here that they give us. It kind of puts things into perspective. The gross worldwide revenue earned by Star Wars, just Star Wars The Last Jedi in 2017, was $1.3 billion. So that's
a couple movies and we can pay for the space exploration.
Right. Can you think of that? I mean, big numbers are kind of hard to get our brains around. But the idea,
especially
that
now we're talking not billions, we're talking trillions and deficits, the other, you know, of course, poor public and taxpayers, we just glaze over. You know, I'm worrying about tax day was yesterday, you know, trillions, billions, you know, they just want my 50 cents.
Well, somebody's got to pay for that parade that's coming
so
up. Oh,
I
there we go.
So.
Okay, but this idea, I like space things, and the idea that the Cassini mission, it was kind of like just three times what one movie, the revenue of one movie. So think about that.
Rather go to movies than pay taxes. What's the matter with that picture?
I don't know. But because we like to tell stories, we like to make especially things about possibilities in the future. I like science fiction, speculative fiction, what we can do. And that's why this radio station is a fun thing to be part of. We've been part of this radio station as the Donalana Kitchen. We're moving into, what, our fifth year here?
Something like that.
And it just is, it's nice. We tell stories and we help one another. And it's so nice to meet so many of Central Iowa.
Well, here's the thing about community radio. You know, we don't have to get our news from Facebook.
No.
We don't have to worry about Russian bots and fake news. We're a bunch of people living in a community, talking amongst ourselves, and it is relevant to us. We live here. We can find out what's going on, what our neighbors are really thinking. And it's, you know, it's all live all the time, and it's real people.
It is. It is.
Community radio is very important to me.
Well, to me too, Donna. I think it's great. And thank you to all your all our listeners out there. Tell if you're a listener out there, just kind of mention to your neighbor sometime that, hey, you listen to this great radio station, KHOI.
It's all about us.
And you'd be surprised what you'd hear on this radio station. Yes, we are. Yeah, we're good.
We do. We have a lot of diversity, young people, old people, all kinds of, you know, races, religions, creeds, opinions. And these are people from our community, people that we know, and we can get to know them better on the radio.
Yeah, I like that. And put your money where your ears are. If you're
gotta
listening,
support it. Yeah. Gotta support it.
If you're listening,
I mean, we are a nonprofit organization. We don't have advertising, and we are here for no other reason than to serve this community and be productive members of this community.
Great. You get what you pay for. So put your money where it will do a whole lot of good. Oh, I've got a little thing. I got a food thing here to mention. I was at a local restaurant recently, and I had something ordered from the menu, and it was so good, I'm going to go home and try it myself. It was warm herbed olives. Now, it's simple. I love olives. Black, but it was a collection of olives.
Colors, different colors.
Different colors. Mm-hmm. But it was warm. It was warmed up in olive oil, and it was...
So it wasn't like the tangy vinegary kind.
No. That's what was so good about it. I suppose they started out with the tangy, which I like too.
I'm going to guess that you could take those olives, because obviously we're not growing olives around here.
We're
not making our own. It's quite a process to actually cure olives. I have tried it. So we're going to buy them at the store, and they've come from somewhere, whether it's California or Greece or Spain or something like that. So what I would do is, were these mixed colors?
Yes.
I haven't tasted this.
Yeah.
I would kind of drain it a little bit
out
of what the brine that it's been sitting in, mm-hmm. and then recover it in olive oil and whatever. What herbs do you think they were using?
Oh, a lot of Italian-y sort of oregano.
Probably oregano for sure.
Yeah, and there were little bits of rosemary in there, I know for sure.
Oh, yummy.
But it was all so crunchy. Oh, and there were some, you could tell there were some little hot pepper flakes in there of some sort. Just a tiny amount. They weren't super
spicy. I might even put lemon zest. In fact, I was making some, I bought some feta cheese last week and did the same thing. You know, you take it out of its package, you cube it up, you put it in olive oil, and then you put in herbs. So I did basil, marjoram, a couple of kinds of pepper, a pink pepper, a black pepper, and some, I think, Aleppo pepper. And then I put in some lemon zest. I mean, so you could do the same kind of thing.
Yes.
And then they warmed it, though.
Now the warm was very, very nice.
Nice idea.
It was very, and yes, it was finger food, and they were kind of a little, you know, oily, but that's all right. I can lick
my
fingers.
Yeah, well, you want to dip a little bread into it, and the oil itself becomes quite flavored by the olives and all the herbs, so that's another delicious thing to put on the bread.
Now, wasn't that nice? You can learn the darndest thing
and
on
simple.
This show.
Talk about simple.
Simple, yeah. And it was just, like I said, I like olives in general, but this sort of made them very, very special.
Where'd you find this?
Oh, let's see. I was at one of our fine local Central Iowa restaurants, and I can't remember. Oh, I think it was that new one. Provisions.
Oh, you had it at Provisions. Okay.
So
that's shout out to Provisions for that.
Then,
good.
Pretty good.
Yep.
There you go. You are listening to KHOI. Well, this is community radio, and this is the fund. We're just starting our fun drive week.
Fund drive.
Yes,
there
we are. So join us. KHOI 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. was some music of UB Blake. He wrote that tune. It's called Tricky Fingers. We've been talking here around our kitchen table here, and we realized that in central Iowa there has been kind of this burst, this springtime burst of new restaurants. What you mentioned one, Donna.
Oh yeah, there's a new one I'm gonna hopefully we'll get to go to this week. I believe it's Sudanese. And it's in the old Fuentes restaurant space. So that's kind of on Duff, I don't know, just a little bit below.
Across from Target, pretty much.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Somewhere over there. And we'll let you know after we've been.
Have you been, Felix? Have you been to the Sudanese restaurant? No?
I have not. It's called Safari Cuisine. It has fantastic reviews. It's all 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
Everywhere.
Okay. Well, we got to get there and give our review, too.
The menu looks very good. Falafel, euros. I think they have lasagna for some reason. But I try it, you know? I want to know.
Okay. Inquiring minds want to know. Yeah, yeah. Yes, we do. Well, I've got a book here I would like to share with you. I love reading, and I love the Ames Public Library and all public libraries. It's one of those common good kind of things. It's one of the nice things we do for each other. I read about this author, a long time ago, and I had the darndest time finding this book. And then I found out because it just came out. It wasn't here yet. His name is Eduardo Galeano, and he is a South American writer. He had recently passed away, but evidently he's much beloved in South America. He lived all over the place. Mainly he grew up in a place called Montevideo, which is in Brazil, I think. He was born in 1940. He has written a whole lot of stuff, and he lived in exile for a while in Argentina and Spain, and he returned to Uruguay, and in this book, he travels all over and he gathers things and he kind of edits them down into these wonderful little bits of prose and thoughts about places that he's been.
So this is not fiction then?
No. Well,
Hunter of Stories. Okay.
Yeah, the book is called Hunter of Stories by Eduardo Galeano. He is enchanted and tells us about myth, history, current events going on, things he's discovered around the world. And each little story mainly is less than half a page.
Oh, they're really short.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, and they read like poetry. Yeah. And it's nice to find out about the world by reading someone that has been there. And he edits things down so nicely.
The human need for story is completely cross-cultural. And I guess that the root of that is that we are all us punny little beings who are born and then we die, and that's inevitable. We want to try to make some sense of why, what is the purpose of our lives. And this is what stories do. It's a comfort mechanism, I think. Even the difficult stories, of course, you know, in the end, we really, really don't know. But stories are something that we need to tell ourselves.
Yes. So this is a book called The Hunter of Stories by Eduardo Galeano. It's from Nation Books, published in New York. It's translated by Mark Fried. And here's a little item that I ran across. He says, in a community newspaper in Barcelona, Spain, in the Raval neighborhood, an anonymous hand wrote, "Your God is Jewish, your music is African, your car is Japanese, your pizza is Italian, your gas is Algerian, your coffee's Brazilian, your democracy is Greek, your numbers are Arabic, and your letters are Latin. I am your neighbor, and you call me a foreigner?" So this is just a nice book to peruse through. And I want to give a shout out to librarians everywhere, because in my search for this book, I did all the, you know, looking in the card catalog and up and down the stacks, and I approached the reference librarian there because I couldn't find this thing. Oh, it's a new book. We had to look in the new book section, and it was in the wrong place. It had moved from, I don't know where it was, it had moved like 10 feet down the row, and we found what kind of, we found it next to some recipe books. I don't know why, but I did finally find it. So that's something else. The human beings at libraries, they connect us up with
and
the nicest
people.
And we
have a great library.
Yes.
We have a really, really fine library in Ames.
Right. So
in addition to the college library, but just the public library is a fantastic resource.
That's very good. So, Hunter of Stories by Eduardo Galeano, a good read. And evidently, when he was alive, he did a lot of traveling around, and even school children all over Latin America would applaud. They had all heard of him because he's written so much and he was much beloved. What a nice thing to be. Yes, Eduardo Galeano. So, you have anything else for us, Donna?
Well, there was this little bit that I read about. It's is botanical sexism making allergies worse?
Oh, dear.
So apparently, in our efforts over the last 20 or more years to reduce messy trees and messy plants, many landscaping municipal landscapers and all kinds of civically minded people began planting male-only plants because they don't drop seeds. They're not so messy. But Mother Nature has the last laugh. What have we done? The male plants produce a lot of pollen. And without having the female plants around to accept the pollen and also produce less pollen because the females are, of course, the receptors of the pollen, we now have allergy and pollen epidemics.
Right.
So we got to remember, you know, there is a reason in our gendered reality where it's half males and half females, more or less. That's a good balance, and we should keep it there. And let's be sure to plant some of these female plants and kind of restore the balance, even though they might be messier. Messy plants. My goodness.
So remember, when it comes to seasonal allergies, there's no free lunch. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear a little bit more about why people support this fine radio station. Let's hear from our engineer, Kobe Gaines. Hey, what do you have to say about KHOI?
KHOI, since I've came here, I started out with the audio lab, like I said before, coming from Iowa State University as a sophomore. Ursula, Evan, and Becca, the staff that helped us get our podcast ready for the air, they definitely, you know, drew me in, and that's why I wanted to become an intern here. And the fun hasn't stopped yet. It's been amazing.
And now he's an engineer. Did you just learn how to engineer?
Yeah, Evan made a whole book for us kind of engineering the board and just started out. And he said, you want to come on and do the Donalana Kitchen? You'll love them. They have great personalities. And, you know, I love you guys. It's been amazing. So
we laugh a lot.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And I like seeing both sides of it, too. So it's been amazing. But, you know, me being a intern, if you would like to be a part of the KHOI family, come down to our studio at the Bantorian Building at 410 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames. You really can't miss it. It's a historical site. You can also check out the beautiful broadcast studios built by our very own volunteers here. If you're interested in the radio or podcasting, we'll show you how. So, you know, don't be scared. We got you. You can become a member of the KHOI family by becoming a member of the station. It's $55. That is 15 cents a day, people. Easy money for you. And it, trust me, your ears will be gifted by these golden voices on here. You can sign up by coming to the station or by calling 515-292-2878. And that is 515-292-2878. Or by going online at khoifm.org and click that bright yellow, sunny, you know, donate button. Community radio is important to me because through this radio station, voices of the local people, ideas, and feelings are heard.
All right.
Yes, they are. Thank you, Kobe. And it's so much fun to get together and do this for you once a week. There's other shows that happen all week. This station's on here 24/7. Some of the stuff that you hear is syndicated nationally and is brought to you by bringing it in here and putting it on the air. But there is so much that is produced locally, and it's all worth hearing. it's a fun thing
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, we hope that, you know, some of the things that we talk about on the Donna Lana Kitchen encourage you to make healthy choices in your life, encourage you to be creative in the kitchen, give you information that is really relevant, plus enjoy it.
Yes.
We have a good time.
Yeah. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Yes, we are. Donna Lana Kitchen's been a part of this good radio station for, oh, almost 5 years now, and we're enjoying it. Today we've had music by UB Blake. Thanks to our listeners. Support this fine radio station. Put your money where your ears are. Local radio is a treasure. Invest in this treasure. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had Fine Engineering by Kobe Gaines. Eat good food and enjoy life.